Okay, I want you to visualize a scenario with me. And for a lot of people, this isn't a hypothetical. It's a very real, very visceral memory. You're out on a lake. It's a beautiful Saturday. Sun is shining. You're on a boat, maybe a little tipsy, maybe just relaxed. You pull out your phone to snap a picture and slip.
Oh, I can see it happening, that slow motion tumble.
Exactly. You watch the phone hit the water and just, disappear into the dark.
Right.
Now, normally the panic is about what, the $1,000 to replace the hardware or losing some photos of your dog or
He's got
something.
no annoyance.
But if you're holding a significant amount of crypto on that device, the panic is it's existential. It isn't, can I replace the phone? It's, did I just delete my life savings?
That is the specific sinking stomach feeling we're addressing today. Because in the traditional banking world, that phone is just an access point. If it sinks, you walk into a branch with your ID.
And you get your money back.
You get your money back.
But we aren't talking about traditional banking. We're diving into Lesson 11 and Astrocyze 11 from the First Crypto Steps course. And the source material makes this distinction that I think is the most important concept to grasp right out of the gate.
The house key analogy.
The house key analogy, but with a really terrifying twist.
It is. It's the locksmith analogy.
Yeah.
In the physical world, if you lose your house key and your spare key and your neighbor's key, you call a locksmith.
And they drill the lock, costs you $100, but you get back in
Exactly.
later.
And the twist.
In crypto, there is no locksmith. There's no password reset button. There's no customer support line at Bitcoin HQ. If you lose the keys to your funds, the math just dictates that you are locked out
Forever.
forever. It doesn't matter if you have $10 million in there. Without the key, it is effectively zero.
That is the reality check. So, our mission for this deep dive is pretty clear. We're going to take the materials from Lesson 11 and transform you, the listener,
Yeah.
from someone who's just, hoping they don't drop their phone.
Right. Into someone with a bank vault strategy. We need to move from fragility to resilience.
We need to build a system that can survive a lake, a fire, or, even your own forgetfulness.
Okay, so let's start with the master key itself. The source material spends a lot of time defining what we're actually backing up. And I think a common misconception, I've certainly had it, is that I need to back up the app.
Yeah, that's a fatal assumption, and the text corrects this immediately.
So I don't need to back up my Exodus wallet or MetaMask settings.
Never. You never need to back up the app. Apps are just interfaces. They're like browsers for the blockchain. You can delete the app, reinstall it, switch to a totally different one. The only thing that matters is the seed phrase.
The seed phrase. This is usually that list of 12 or 24 random words, Apple, River, Galaxy, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
But why words? Why isn't it just a long string of numbers like a credit card?
Well, it actually is a long string of numbers under the hood. The source material alludes to the technical standard, BIP39. Those words are a human-readable representation of a massive string of random binary digits.
Okay.
It's the entropy, the randomness, that generates your keys. Humans are terrible at writing down long strings of characters without making mistakes, but we're okay at writing down apple and river.
So the words are just a translation layer for us.
Precisely. The source calls this the master key. Or the root. From this one string of words, your wallet can mathematically generate every single address and private key you will ever use.
Which explains the restoration process. So back to my lake disaster. I buy a new phone, I download a Fruff Wallet app, any app,
Right.
and I just select import wallet and type in those 12 words.
And the math kicks in. The wallet takes those words, runs the algorithm, and derives all your accounts. It scans the blockchain, sees your balance, and boom, your money appears.
Because it was never on the sunken
He
phone.
was on the ledger.
Yeah.
The words just gave you the right to move it again.
But here's where the source material waves a giant red flag. Precision. It says this isn't like a password where maybe you can guess it.
No, not at all. The nature of these phrases involves what's called a checksum. If you get one word wrong, you write run instead of running, or you misspell something, it isn't just a typo. The math changes completely.
And it generates a totally different key.
A different key that points to an empty wallet, or just an invalid one. And the order is absolutely critical. Word number four must be word number four. If you swap word four and word five, the derivation path changes.
So when we talk about backups, we are talking about forensic accuracy.
You have to treat it like nuclear launch codes, honestly.
Okay, so we know what we're backing up. Now we need to look at how. The exercise material gives these three student scenarios, A, B, and C, to illustrate this. I want to start with student B because frankly, student B behaves like everyone I know.
Student B is the digital native, for sure.
Right. Student B gets their 12 words. They don't have a pen, but they have their iPhone. So they open Apple Notes, type in the words, maybe lock the note. It syncs to iCloud. They feel great. It's accessible, backed up by Apple, password protected. Why does the source classify this as a digital sin?
It classifies it as the riskiest possible move. It just comes down to attack surface.
Attack surface.
Yeah. When you write something on paper, the only way to steal it is to physically break into your house. When you put it in the cloud, you're exposing it to the entire internet.
But isn't the cloud encrypted? I mean, we trust it with our credit cards, our emails. Apple and Google spend billions on security.
They do, but crypto is different. The transactions are irreversible. If someone steals your credit card, you call Visa, you do a chargeback.
Right.
If someone gets your seed phrase, the money is gone, instantly. And hackers know this. The source warns that they run automated scripts that scan compromised iCloud accounts, Evernotes, email inboxes, specifically looking for patterns of 12 or 24 words from that BIP39 word list.
So they're not even looking for a file named My Bitcoin Password. They're just looking for the structure of the words.
Exactly, the syntax. And here's the kicker that's in the deeper notes. Screenshots. People love to screenshot their seed phrase because it's fast.
Oh, I've definitely had that before.
But many photo apps now have OCR, optical character recognition. That means the text in your photo is now searchable data. A hacker can query a compromised photo library for seed phrase or just scan for word lists, and the software will serve it right up.
Wow, I did not think about that. You think it's hidden in a messy camera roll, but it's not.
The algorithm sees it instantly.
So digital storage equals internet exposure. That's the rule.
Zero digital footprint. That's the only safe way. Don't type it. Don't photograph it. Don't save it in a password manager unless you really, really know what you're doing with local encryption. For most people, analog only.
Which brings us to Student C, the minimalist. Student C says, I don't trust the cloud and I don't want paper lying around. I'll just memorize it. The brain wallet.
The brain wallet.
Yeah.
It's a very romantic idea, isn't it? It feels very spy novel. I carry my millions in my mind.
Right.
But the source material is brutal on this. It calls it a guaranteed way to lose your funds eventually.
It brings up the 3 months later problem.
Mm-hmm. You memorize it today. You recite it in the shower for a week. But then life happens. 3 months go by. Can you recall it with 100% precision? Remember, if you forget one word or swap two words,
you're the person standing outside the house with no locksmith.
And that's not even considering accidents, a concussion, a stroke, high stress, just aging. Human memory is fallible. It degrades.
Your brain is not a storage device?
It's a processing device. Hmm. The source is very clear on that.
Okay, so digital is too risky. Memory is too faulty. That leaves us with the teacher's pet, Student A. Let's break down why Student A's strategy is the gold standard here.
Student A went analog. They wrote it down on a physical medium. That's step one. Taking it offline creates an air gap. A hacker in a basement somewhere cannot hack a piece of paper in your drawer.
Okay, but, and I'll play devil's advocate, paper is fragile. Houses burn down. Pipes burst. Coffee spills if I have my life savings on a post-it note.
Which is why the source introduces the hierarchy of materials. Paper is the baseline. It is better than digital, but it has those physical risks. The upgrade, the platinum standard, if you will, is metal.
Steel or titanium plates. Is that something normal people actually do?
They do, and they should. You can buy these simple kits, often called crypto steel or similar brands, where you slide metal letters into a rail or you use a center punch to make dents in a titanium plate.
That sounds intense.
Well, think about a house fire. An average house fire burns at around, 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit. Paper ignites at 451, so your paper backup is just gone.
Right, ash.
But stainless steel has a melting point of around 2,500 degrees. Mm. So your house burns to the ground, the paper in your safe is ash, the metal plate, it might be blackened, but your money's still legible.
That is a massive margin of safety.
It really is.
But Student A didn't just stop at making it durable. They did something else with the location that the source says is crucial.
Geographic distribution.
Yeah.
This is the nuke-proof part of the strategy. Student A kept one copy at home, but kept a second copy at a trusted family member's house.
Why is that redundancy so critical? Isn't a safe at home enough?
It eliminates the single point of failure. If you have the most durable titanium plate in the world, but a tornado takes your house, it's gone. Or a thief breaks in and physically steals your safe.
Right. Or you just lose it. I mean, people lose things in their own homes all the time.
All the time. By having a copy at your mom's house or in a safety deposit box, you're insuring against local disasters.
Yeah.
It's extremely unlikely that your house and your mom's house will be destroyed at the same time.
Okay, so the source does get into some advanced territory here. For people thinking, I don't trust my mom not to peek, or what if her house gets burglarized? It talks about splitting the key.
This is a controversial one. There's a mathematical way to do this called Shamir's secret sharing, but the lesson discussed is a simpler manual version.
Yeah, which is?
You take your 12 words. You write words 1 through 6 on one plate and words 7 through 12 on another.
And you separate them. First half at your house, second half at your brother's house.
Right. If a thief finds the paper at your house, they only have 6 words. The math makes it impossible to guess the other 6.
Yeah.
So your funds are safe from that kind of theft.
But I feel a but coming.
It's a massive trade-off. You have just increased your security against theft, but you have massively decreased your security against loss.
Because now I need both pieces to get my money back.
Correct. If your brother's house burns down or he accidentally throws away that weird piece of metal,
yeah,
you are longed out. You cannot restore from half a key.
So for most people?
For most people, the source suggests full redundancy, 2 complete copies and 2 secure places is safer than splitting.
Got it. Okay, there is one step in the exercise that I think 99% of people skip. I know I have. The verification drill.
This is the most crucial practical advice in the whole text, the test drive. Imagine packing a parachute, jumping out of a plane, and hoping you packed it right.
That's a good analogy.
That's what you're doing if you don't verify your backup.
So what's the protocol? Walk us through it.
Before you load your life savings onto a wallet, you load a tiny amount, like $5.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and this is the scary part, you delete the wallet, you wipe the app from your phone.
Intentionally locking yourself out, that feels so wrong.
It feels terrifying, but you have to do it. Then you take that piece of paper or that metal plate you just made, and you try to restore the wallet using only that backup.
And if the $5 comes back?
Then you know. You aren't hoping your handwriting is legible. You know it is. You aren't hoping you got the order right. You proved it. If it doesn't work, you lost $5 and you learned a valuable lesson.
That seems like a mandatory step. Don't trust it until you've wiped it and restored it.
Absolutely. If you haven't verified it, you don't really have a backup. You just have a hope.
We have to pivot to the final section of the source material, the grim section. It deals with what the text calls the bus factor.
Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable, but it's the ultimate responsibility of being your own bank. The bus factor asks, if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, does your wealth die with you?
Because there's no customer support, my spouse can't call Bitcoin and send a death certificate to unlock the funds.
That is the hard truth. Millions of dollars in crypto are lost every year because the owner died and nobody knew where the seed phrase was. To the blockchain, a dead owner looks exactly the same as a hodler who just isn't moving their coins.
The funds just sit there unmovable forever.
Forever.
So what does the source recommend for legacy planning? Because you also don't want to just give your kids the keys while you're alive.
Right. It suggests a kind of analog dead man switch. The simplest method is the sealed envelope. You put the seed phrase or info on where to find it inside a sealed envelope. You give that to a trusted executor or attorney.
But the text explicitly warns about wills. Right. That stood out to me.
Crucial point. Do not write your seed phrase in your last will and testament.
Why not?
Wills often become public record during probate. If you write your 12 words in your will, you have just published your money to the world. Anyone can pull that public record and sweep your wallet.
That's a disaster I would not have thought of. So the will should say, look in the safety deposit box, not hear the words.
Exactly. It refers to the location of the asset, not the access method itself. You separate the map from the key.
It also mentions multi-sig setups.
That's the advanced tier. You set up a wallet that requires, say, 2 out of 3 keys to sign a transaction. You hold one, your spouse holds one, a lawyer holds one. If you die, your spouse and lawyer can combine their keys to access the funds.
It really brings home the point that this isn't just about not losing a password. It's about asset stewardship.
That's the shift. You move from user to custodian. When you hold your own keys, you are the CEO, the security guard, and the estate planner of your own bank.
So let's recap the hierarchy here. We have our 3 students.
Student C is at the bottom. The brain wallet. Don't do it. Student B is the dangerous middle ground. Cloud storage, screenshots. Don't do it. You will get hacked.
And student A is the target.
Analog. Physical redundancy. Write it down, preferably on metal. Verify that it works. and then store those copies in geographically separate secure locations.
It sounds like a lot of work compared to just clicking forgot password.
It is work. But that work is the price of sovereignty. If you want to own your money, truly, where no bank can freeze it, no government can seize it, you have to be the one to secure it.
I think that's a perfect place to land. We started with the nightmare of the phone in the lake. But if you follow lesson 11, that phone in the lake is just an annoyance.
The panic is gone.
You go to your safe, you grab your metal plate, and you are back in business. I want to leave the listener with a thought from that inheritance section. It's a heavy one, but it's necessary. If you couldn't speak for yourself tomorrow, would your digital wealth be a life-changing gift for the people you love? Or would it be a lost treasure buried forever in the digital ocean?
The difference is just 12 words. Written down. Go check your backups.
Thanks for joining us on the Deem Dive.
Stay safe.